I remember when we first started this whole podcast thing, we just came up with the name God Journey. Some people didn't like it. I think it's perfect. This is not about me. This is not my journey. I am a supporting actor in a greater drama that's going on. This is about him.
Thinking outside the box isn't about whether you go to a meeting or not. It's about breaking free of the obligations of religious performance and living in the adventure of a relationship with God as our Father.
Two little guys talking about life, that's good tag.
Slinging freedom all over the place and making no apologies, this is The God Journey.
I'm Brad Cummings.
And I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And we're back from
Easter.
Easter.
Did you have a good Easter time with your family?
We had a marvelous time. We actually were just frolicking around in the pool and had a blast.
In the pool?
In the pool.
Is it warm enough here for the pool?
We decided to spend our vacation and heat the pool.
Oh, so instead of flying off to Mexico,
heated the pool, and we absolutely loved it, and it's a blast.
Cool.
We did suffer through an Easter service, though.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
We suffered through.
We got roped into – it was hilarious.
Roped in.
After our whole discussion.
They come tied you up and drug you off to
– Yeah, we had to meet some folks down in Malibu, so – we did our perfunctory. We'll sit there. Nice thing. It was outdoors. It was
sunrise service? No.
No, no. It was 11 o'clock. It was a beautiful day. It was beautiful in Malibu. But listening to it was basically a whole bunch of people giving testimonies about how, you know, good thing because we're not perfect. Jesus died on the cross so that he could make us perfect. And my kids were looking at me like, Dad, is this true? God expects us to be perfect. And I kind of went, you know what? I really don't think he does. I'm pretty sure he understands who we are, and I don't think he expects that we're going to be perfect. So, no, I would have to nuance a lot of what they're saying. The gist of it was well-intended, but
it was all be perfect as I am perfect? Was that the theme of Easter?
No, it was the thank God Jesus took the punishment for us because we're not perfect. So that's our ticket into heaven. And it's
so now
like,
we have to be perfect? That's kind of a double message, isn't it?
Well, that's what my kids were giving me those funny looks at.
So he died. But now that he died, we should.
Well, yeah, that's why I sat there going like, well, you know what? This is all works-based understanding.
So what do you do when your kids say, well, Dad, it says be perfect even as I am perfect. So is that not possible? How do you answer that?
As far as how do we be perfect?
Yeah.
I think because the perfect one lives inside us, that's our only hope of actually living out what that may mean. But I don't know that that means sinless, flawless perfection.
Oh, see, and I thought I'd arrived there last week.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I had God, that moment.
I missed that day. You should have called.
I think I'm there.
I should have taken a picture.
I thought you would notice. I didn't think I needed to call.
You know,
I thought you would call me saying, I saw a light down the hill.
I saw a light down the hill. Must have been Wayne. He ascended.
Not ascended.
Perfected.
Just reached.
He finally matured to his maximum potential. See, I look at a piece of fruit growing on a tree, and its early stages, if it's in keeping where it's supposed to be, farmer goes out there, looks at it, and says, oh, that's perfect. It's in keeping with what it's supposed to be. And I think I look at some of that, and I'm going like, if we're talking about 100% sinless, flawless perfection, well, how do you got the verse that there's none righteous, no, not one? You got to bring that verse into what does that mean there?
Well, you know, that's what I appreciate about almost every writer of the New Testament gives us some glimpse into their life that, hey, this is all, yeah, be perfect as he is perfect. The goal is our sanctification, being pure, being cleansed, living in greater and greater freedom. But you also get the point that no one's doing it, that we're all in process. And if anyone says he's without sin, he's a liar.
Yeah.
I mean, it's wonderful language to say this is a process. The flesh battles against the spirit and the spirit against the flesh. And I think that's fun stuff.
I think when you look, because, you know, be holy as I am holy, it's like, okay, well, because the Holy One lives inside of me, I can with measure walk that out in reality, but apart from him, I don't have any hope of any of that.
No, and what I like what you said is that God's willing to take us in the process. Even if you take it out of the fruit analogy to a woodworker.
Yeah.
You know, and somebody said, well, how's that coming? Oh, it's perfect. And he may have just chiseled off some of the wood just to start out with. It's not like I'm done, but where it is in the process is exactly what I'm looking for. And I think that's how God loves us and walks us through stuff. I really do.
And because he has a knowledge of us that is complete and total without illusion. I think when he looks down upon us and he has that, he has better thoughts, higher thoughts of us than we have of ourselves. I think God's looking down and he sees his intention. He sees his capacity to work. And he's going, I love what's going on here.
And he sees what's coming to fruition. He sees what we always look at, gosh, what's not done yet? And I think he's looking at, ooh, look what is done. Look what is taking root in that life.
Yeah, he knows where, if he's begun this process, and it says that he's the author and the finisher, and he's going to be faithful to present us to himself, pure, holy, and blameless. Then it's like when he looks down at his work, and I'm yielding, and I'm receiving, and I'm allowing him to do that work, I think he has every capacity to get completely excited, going like, oh, I can't wait.
I love what's happening here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's this, you know, test score that, okay, you took your final exam and 98%. Sorry, you're not perfect. Yeah. I don't think he's evaluating our lives like that. I don't believe that's what those words are meant to convey.
And it would be helpful if we wouldn't either evaluate ourselves.
Oh, you think?
Yeah, I do. Sarah and I began Easter morning just sitting out on our patio. It's a beautiful, quiet morning in this little retreat setting we kind of live in now, where it's just, you can go out there and be alone with nature and the birds are chirping. And we're just sitting there and we read the Emmaus story. We read the Brothers on the Road to Emmaus, the morning of the resurrection. This is one of my favorite stories. At the end of this, when Jesus, what I noticed about the resurrection story this year, you notice the gals come back from the tomb saying, hey, here's what the angel told us, and no one believed them. And the guys come back from Emmaus saying, hey, he appeared to us. And they're like, I don't believe him. It's funny to me. These people didn't trust each other about anything. Everybody's just making up stuff. No one believed anybody. But then when Jesus shows up and he says, don't be upset. And don't let all those doubting questions take over. Look at my hands. Look at my feet. And as Sarah and I were reading that, what hit me, and we had some time to talk about this before, we were suddenly invaded by beagles and granddaughter. We were sitting on our patio, and all of a sudden these two little beagles show up. And we're going, oh, the daughter must be here, because she lets the beagles in the backyard, then she gets the kids out. But talking about, you know how difficult it is to go on this journey with your intellect taking the lead. Because there's just no end of the questions that you'll have. Well, what about this? And, well, what about that? And Jesus comes into the room, and all the questions are, whoa, what is this? And he said, don't let the doubting questions take over. Look at me. Look at my hands. Look at my feet. And what Sam and I talked about is, the only way to live this journey is by beholding him. Fix your eyes on Jesus. Look at him. Yeah, I've got questions about all kinds of things. And sometimes the emails I get, people want me to answer all of those questions before they go on this journey. And I wrote a blog earlier this week that was just saying, you know what? Go on the journey. Get your eyes on him. Let the questions be sorted out in the going. Don't force all the questions to be answered before you head out. And I think for so much of what's going on in Sarah and my life right now, that's just a real growing edge for us, because we'll even have these little nudges. Oh, what about this? And I don't know if I want to get involved in that again. And it's just like God's just saying, hey, follow the nudges. Let the questions be resolved in the going. You can ask questions forever and never come up with an answer.
Yeah, I think if the questions are like the guard and the sentinel, that until I have these answered, I'm not moving, you're unlikely to go anywhere. And I think that's where it's like I kind of resonate with a lot of what you're saying, in that I think so much does get answered in the going, in the relating, yeah, in the context of that, you know what, you can't see some things from here that you can if you were there.
Yeah.
And it's not like, well, what's the answer? It's like, you know what, I can say whatever you want me to say when you're standing right here, but guess what? It won't mean anything until you've journeyed a little bit. Then if I say the very same thing, it's like, oh, it's like someone just unveiled a sunset of a difference of going, yeah, like, oh, that's what you meant. And it's like, yeah, I sort of feel like this was never to be divorced from the context of relationship.
Yeah, and he doesn't say don't have the questions.
No.
He doesn't say don't ask stupid questions. It's never that. It's just don't let the questions take over. Let revelation lead the journey. The questions will get resolved. I think, like you're saying, you get down to a certain place, you look back, and either the question get answered or what you realize is, boy, that's not an important question. I don't need that question answered anymore. So I'm going to head on. We got some awesome email this week.
We
could spend the entire podcast just talking about email. And there's a lot from the podcast we did on the cross last week, and we may get to some of that. But there's just some wonderful glimpses of people on journeys. And I think these would be so inspiring to people. Here Gene writes us, says, I want to thank you both for the podcast. Cindy, my better two-thirds sent 63, so or 65, so it wasn't his better half. His better two-thirds, and I listened to them together and got much, not the least, the humor. Well, Cindy went home yesterday. I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis in 86. Cindy was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis in 87.
Oh, gosh.
The head doctor of research with the National Association told us that we had better odds of winning the lottery than both developing this. Cindy's MS was much different than mine, along with chronic pain, migraine, headaches almost constantly. She dealt with and a number of other things. I'm not even sure what they all are. And a series of physical problems. She had to handle the fact that all of her life she had been a very physical, active, and involved person. The world misuses many words, not the least the word love. What this culture calls love is really romance, which is up one day and down the next. Unlike that, love is stronger than steel and steady as a rock. Love in a believer's marriage says, I want my spouse to go home first because I don't want him or her to live with a broken heart and have to deal with all the stuff that has to be dealt with. About 2.5 years ago, I asked Daddy to allow Cindy to come home before me and not have her be the one that was left. That is, unless she and I could make the trip together, which was the best of all options. He answered that prayer with a deep, heartfelt assurance it would be so, and he honored the prayer yesterday. I came home from shopping and found her earth suit cold.
Mm.
But he found a note that she had written for him before to say goodbye. He said, you would have loved to know her to really appreciate this fully, but everyone who knew her thought of her as the coupon lady. If you headed off to get a drink of water from a drinking fountain, she'd likely have a coupon for it. Attached to her loving goodbye note was a coupon for a special a local funeral home was running.
And he says, yeah, that's the first time I've ever heard of that.
And he said, typing those last few words was through laughter and tears. Thank you for bringing something in your podcast that we were able to share together. Isn't that cool?
Mm.
And then a note or so, a day or two later, he sent me their obituary notice for her and this note. The only thing I felt left undone that somehow is important is to sit in your kitchen sharing Sarah's chocolate chip cookies along some good conversation and praise. So, gee, I wrote back to Dave, if you ever make it to California, we can do the cookies and we can do the conversation.
They're worth the trip, I think.
I love how Grace lived. I'm about two people. My brother died of MS at 49, so I'm very aware of multiple sclerosis and what it all means. To have a couple of faith endure it together with that kind of love and letting go and humor. That touched me deeply. I thought it was a fabulous letter.
That's grace-filled living.
It is, and doesn't mean everything's good situationally. It just means God's even in the crud this life hurls out.
I think even the expectation that somehow, oh, sorry, I love Jesus, therefore there's no difficulty in life. I don't even know where people buy that kind of thought.
Yeah.
Because it's like, you know what? I don't know if we had that. Frankly, if we would actually like it, I'm not one that enjoys suffering, but I think the deepest sense of embrace is that I'm not alone in the midst of it.
Yeah,
I got to tell you, that does something for me than the thought of a carefree, pain-free existence.
Yeah. You know what? Challenges somehow ennoble the joys, and vice versa. I don't know how that all sorts out. I love that someone could live in that space of grace, dealing with what they were dealing with. Dan, I love this letter too. Dan, our old friend in Kansas City, said, just ran into an old friend at the store. He must have been doing a lot of thinking about me and my journey away from organized Sunday morning meetings because he instantly jumped into, so where are you going to church? And he proceeded into a rather lengthy diatribe on his daily prayer, reading habits, and how important attending the house of God are the vital things among his habits that draws him closer to God. And when he finished, I just said, thank you. I guess you felt you need to share that. And we hugged. This is why I love what Dan writes. Wayne, things have changed in me. I used to want to go toe-to-toe with such people, especially when challenged. But I was willing to walk away from the encounter having him thinking I was totally wrong, rather than me walking away with the feeling I proved myself right. What was at stake was not what he thought of me. What was at stake was love and remaining in relationship with him. It used to be my pride and self-esteem was the central motivation for relationship, and being right in doctrine and principle was the key. Now relationship is the key. Even if it looks like I'm a bumbling fool in order to preserve the possibility of future relationship, I'm with it.
That's freedom.
That's a great freedom. All of you are
That's
worried
freedom.
About. You know, when people ask me, "What to go to church?" What do I say? Just you don't have to say anything other than, "Hey, man, it's cool. I love you, and I could be a bumbling idiot, but pray for me." And let go, and let them go away, preserving the relationship rather than having to demean them to somehow.
Yeah, and you
stake out
and you
deal.
Don't got to duke it out as if you know. It's like I don't know what all that guy shared, but the fact that he was gracious enough to listen. And to listen with a sense of affirmation. I mean, I just, you know, I kind of like, gosh, I'm sure he didn't say it snarkily, but to just listen with a sense of affirmation that doesn't make an issue of it.
Right.
Otherwise, you could have a horrible, ugly little religious fight right there.
And you don't have to pretend like you agree.
Yeah.
You don't do that either. You can't just say, hey, I guess you needed to share that. And you go away, hopefully, with the relationship intact. I just think that's so important.
Yeah.
Rather than being right and fighting the issue, particularly parents with adult children, who every time, I get that letter all the time, my kids are doing this, and, you know, should I, when I'm with them, should I bring that up? And I'm like, don't they already know you disapprove? Do you really want to go there? Do you really want to keep pushing away? Well, we made a determination with our kids. They got 15, 16, 17 up in that area. We wanted to preserve our friendship with our kids at all. It doesn't mean we had to agree with them. We didn't, like, reduce ourselves to their level and have to pretend things that we didn't. But we decided that the relationship we'd have with our children was more important than them knowing we were right about whatever we were currently going into, or that they knew they were wrong. And that allowed our relationship with our kids to just flourish through those years in wonderful ways.
See, what that allows is for relationship to remain primary. And the issues will sort themselves out. The issues are real. I mean, and I mean, some of the email that I get is people asking questions like, what do I do? It's like, you know what? If you fail to continue in a love relationship, you lose a voice altogether.
Yeah.
So if the end desire is a change in that person's heart, that you might be an influencer within. I can't make it happen, can't force it, can't demand it, but I might have the capacity to influence. You lose that the minute you step out of a loving demeanor of a relationship that allows for the ongoing dialogue.
Yeah, and loving somebody in a relationship doesn't mean people-pleasing. They have to say what they want. I have to be a fraud and fake something that isn't real.
No.
It just says, hey, I can still be real, but I'm putting the relationship above my need to be right with you.
And
I like
you're making the loving of a someone not dependent upon agreement with you in all things.
Yeah.
And if you don't do that, I don't know what it is that they feel from us, because it just feels like manipulation. Oh, if I do all the right things, you love me.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm sure someone's in there, well, but didn't Jesus say, if you obey my commands, you'll remain in my love? And it's like a little point of clarification. Never said that if you obey me, I'll still love you.
Right.
It's you'll have an awareness of that love that sometimes your disobedience removes you into a different place. But it doesn't change the fact that God loves you.
No, exactly. But it does change the fact that you're not living in, you're not remaining in that love because you've decided to go off on your own way. So the fact that he loves you, just like the younger kid in the prodigal story, God still loved that kid, but he wasn't remaining in that love because he was out serving himself. But, yeah, God's love doesn't change. And ours needn't. And what you said, if you only end up being able to be friends with people who agree with you, you end up in this pretty small club of like-minded people.
And that pretty soon disintegrates, too.
Which is, well, it gets smaller and smaller. And finally, we're
I don't like most of those gurus.
And finally, we're one mind because only one mind is allowed to function. And that's never healthy. I love this. I won't give the name because I'm not sure this was something he wanted to be shared publicly. So I'll just kind of, so people don't know who he is. But he wrote this week to me, and I just love it. It's a guy I've met. He said, the journey's amazing. Twists and turns all through have shaken out from religion. I find I'm a whole lot happier and a whole lot less angry now, that I am less concerned with controlling people and more interested in being present in the moment, no matter where they are at. The guilt is dying, as you promised it would. I have also been able to approach my estranged wife and own a number of my own missteps from the past. This has been a real healing for me. It has also enabled me to step away from the madness that surrounds her and truly rest in the moment. I find that when I am aware that I cannot control situations, people, and the future, I have no capacity to think about it, but rather focus on today, on right now, and what Father is doing in the moment. I feel as if he's reducing me so that I only can live in the moment, where once I fixated on influencing and controlling situations, people, and the future. How cool is that?
Mm.
Isn't that good?
Talk about simplifying your life.
Yeah, these are great. What I loved about this, and these all email came in the last couple of days, really. People who are in wonderful moments of going from being disillusioned to gratefully disillusioned. I get it. This journey frees me to live differently.
Mm-hmm.
And that freedom, not having to control people, not having to make sure you're right in the conversation so someone else gets whatever they want, but living inside what God's doing at any moment, really it's a great way to live.
Well, I also think it's the fruit of resting in the fact that you're loved. I think that's what empowers that, you know, my ability to walk away from a conversation wherein someone can think I'm just an idiot and I'm wrong.
Yeah, to walk away from a fight.
And my actually being okay with that, what enables that? Is that just I'm going to grit it and just, no. I never had any ability back in the gritting days.
Right, and didn't change people.
No,
but what you did.
Yeah. And that guy, I may have walked away, but the conversation still remained, you know, I played it over in my head forever. What really empowers you to have that place of freedom is the fact that those voices are no longer central. They're not the defining elements. There's a greater voice that's defining the fact that I am loved, and it's won my heart to that. And that's what allows me to then become a very generous soul to everyone else around me, is when I know that generosity for myself. Gosh, it's easy to give away.
It really is. And when you know that God, if God were going to force an issue every day about me being right about everything, God and I wouldn't have much of a relationship.
And I think we'd certainly have a lot of discussions.
We really would. And I'd be devastated every day. But that God is willing to take us where we are and move us on gently, I think it does exactly what you say. It then allows us to live inside other relationships differently than we had to before. Because we're not so concerned about the future, because it rests in Father's hands. I don't find my joy in making sure you're responding to me the way I want you to. That's not my joy. My right. joy is found in Him and in unloving. And I know I felt like Father whispered to me. I think I told you the story earlier this week, but there's a couple I feel like God just whispered, I want you to help them. And the last time God told me that led to a whole lot of stuff that I wouldn't want to do again. And I kind of jokingly, just kind of in my heart, I'm going, boy, that led to all that crap. Yeah, I don't know that I want to do that again. And I felt like what God was in my heart, I asked you to help him. I didn't ask you to do what you ended up doing with him. And I just stepped back and I went, now that is hilarious.
It's true.
Helping people is so easy.
Mm-hmm.
Going into business with them or getting into some kind of other brokered agreement, that's a nightmare. But just loving and helping people without any strings attached. I think I'm going to like that way.
That whole phrase, free to live and love without agenda. If I've got to control the outcome and I got to make sure that I get my slice, I don't think you're really free to live and love without agenda.
No, absolutely.
You're just not, because you're going to have to control this. You're going to have to secure that. And I'm not saying that you can't do that. I don't know how you function in business and stuff without having some of those elements defined, but I'm not sure that's what God has called us to. I don't think that's salt and light in the earth.
Yeah, and I guess if you just told the parable today, sometimes you do pick the guy up off the road from being beaten by the crooks, and you do check him into a hotel, and then he turns around and sues you for not taking him to a hospital or something. I guess that could be told today, too. I don't know. This I love. This is from a 21-year-old in Holland. For almost a year now, I'm on a new road trying to discover the truth and enjoy it a lot. I stepped out of church 6 months ago, and I feel really free, although I sometimes feel the need to do all kinds of things for God. But I'm a dancer, and in my school, there are a lot of gay people around me. For years, I had problems loving them because I could only think that they were what they were doing was wrong in the eyes of God, and I was also afraid that they would fall in love with me. But since I stepped out of the whole religion thing and started to understand that God loves me just for who I am, I also started to have a strange but really deep love for all people, including the gay people around me. You talk a lot on the podcast about loving people that God puts in front of you. And I feel that it happens not because I'm busy trying to do it. It just happens organically.
Mm.
Isn't that a great story?
That's huge.
21-year-old, great journey. Love it.
That's huge.
And then Eric wrote this. One, this is the last of probably these and kind of transitions if we want to talk more about what we talked about last week. But Eric wrote me a note. Eric's just allowed himself to just... He works with some kind of homeless ministry, and for the first time, I guess, or at some new moment of his life, he just had a new love, grabbed this homeless man and just hugged him, and just the grief and love over. He just told me this story about having such an empathetic heart for this brother that was just so lonely and so broken. He said, now some people, and I've had one say this to me concerning this experience and my contention that God feels for and loves all people. This is what he was told. I know the scriptures, but the gospel is destroyed if God loves everyone and you are left in an Arminian mush of sentimental religion if that is the case. However, if the truth is that the whole world is worthy of burning due to the fact that we are all born children of the devil and due to burn, therefore, and he is going to save some out of the world first, we are special people. He goes, what? Oh, kiosk, can you imagine that convoluted thinking? If you really want to believe
can
God...
Can I imagine it? It's just bounced off.
If God only loves certain people and not everybody, that somebody's got to protect that view. Otherwise, we wouldn't be the special people God saves.
I mean, yeah, and I bet that really does great for the humility meter.
Religion is a... Boy, it's a sad deal, isn't it? Somehow, I've got to be special. I've got to be unique to God, because then it justifies why those other homeless people, gay people, it understands why God can
be angry. But it's special by comparison of pedigree. It's I'm special because I am better than.
Well, this tradition is you've just been chosen. They weren't chosen. You were.
No, I know, but what you're talking about there is the person saying, well, you know, that makes us special. It really is a comparison one. Because I do want to say, you know what? I don't believe there's a single person on this planet that isn't special to God. There's no way for me to look at each one of my kids. I don't compare my children.
Yep.
I don't sit around the dinner table like, oh, I like this one, but well, that one needs to do better. And each one of them is wonderfully unique, and you're just going like, gosh, I don't know what life was like without them. And life is different because they're here. They're part of this. And in the economy, and I believe the family of God, he can be especially fond of each and every one of us. And it's not, and it doesn't diminish the person to my left.
Oh, and that's so important. I think only living loved in that way can you know that.
Yeah.
I think the bent of our flesh is, I want to be special.
Yeah.
I want to be better than that guy. I want to be better than that. Even identifying people as all people are born of the devil, are children of the devil. Gee, I think I remember Paul saying we were children of disobedience, but we were still children. It wasn't that we weren't children of the Father. We were all born as the children of the Father, not the children of the devil. We've given ourselves, got lost in disobedience. Absolutely. Is there a person that God, is there a person that is that God doesn't love? And that's just... I remember thinking that way. You almost have to when you believe that you get a little special life and God provides in wonderful ways for you. You have to think somehow I deserve this in a way that person over there doesn't.
If my value is dependent upon some sort of comparison dynamics, then, yeah, my righteousness needs to shine better than yours. And if it does, then goody for me, and I feel great, and this is wonderful.
Yeah, I'm reading a book now. It's a story of a little black girl who grew up in this incestuous environment, molested by her cousin, by her brother, by her father, by her grandfather. I look at her journey, and I'm not done with the book yet, so I don't know how it all ends. But as I've been reading this book, I'm going, you know, there's nothing about me that said I got to be born in a home that wasn't like that. And somehow she deserved to be born in a home that was like that and face all of those challenges to somehow find life. There's no explanation of that in terms of God choosing. I think I'll put you there. I think I'll put you there because you, well, we didn't deserve anything when we got born. Everything that we've experienced is the mercy of God. And the mercy of God needs to be even more real for people.
Right.
Who've gotten starts like that.
Right.
Who've been in very broken and distorted situations. So.
Yeah, the whole performance overlay that religion brings, you know, even just the whole bit of, you know, God's standard is perfection, and you didn't meet the standard, therefore he had to bring the sacrifice of Jesus. And I'm just going like, is that why God created? So that he could have some performers meet his standard? And then when they didn't meet his standard, oh, I got to, it'll cost me my son, but I'll save this. I'll prove that it wasn't a mistake. Yeah, you're just like, I'm pretty sure that really isn't the whole rationale behind his love and creation.
No.
Is looking upon that lens where it's like, you know what? I don't think he's keeping score like religion has supposed he is.
Nor is he saying, Wayne, you're a good, I like you as an embryo, so I'm going to put you in America. I'm going to put this other person in Cambodia or India or some other place, born in a slum or born.
That's just the roll of the dice, huh?
I don't know about the roll of the die. I think it's just, I mean, God's given us the freedom to populate the earth. So everybody has kids. You don't have to be righteous to have kids. You don't have to have a healthy environment to have kids. Our society put me through more to let me drive a car than it did let me have a child. Yeah.
You know, I think if we fail to recognize that, guess what? God has placed us in a place of co-creation where, you know what? I don't really think life can happen without him, but we definitely play a part in that. And because we're decision makers and he gives us that capacity, I think so oftentimes people are trying to then look at the universe through, well, it's all this or it's all that. It's like, no, I think it's something more in the partnership in the middle. It is that dance. I was born here. Well, why? I don't know why. Everyone that says, everything happens for a reason. I'm just going, I don't know. I don't know. But I do know this. God's going to meet me. Every single place that I am, if I will allow him to engage with me, he wants to do something there. So the grace that that person has in that really tough spot is no different than the grace of his presence that I have in mine. God is going to meet us and bring us through if we partner with him.
And we're all fearfully and wonderfully made, no matter how we started. I think her questions in this book, and I hear it often from people who grew up in very, very difficult bondage, painful, being the object of someone else's sin. Why me, God? Even this little girl at 6 said, God, why me, God? Why won't you free me from this? Why won't you set me free? Why me, God? There is that, as the layman came to Jesus, you know, or the disciple said, "What did this man sin or did his parents that he would be born like this?" And Jesus guy said, it's not about that. It's about the glory of God being revealed in the brokenness of humanity.
Yeah.
And I think those of us who have been born in more
privileged,
healthy, privileged cultures, it's not so we can enjoy it at their expense.
No.
How is it that we become part of the mercy of God unfolding in people like that? In people that are from broken places and didn't get the leg up on life. When I look at this gal, 15, she's on the streets by herself because there's no, her mom throws her out finally. 15, she got nothing, no one. She's living on the street in the cold of some back east community. And my heart's just breaking as I'm reading this book. I'm going, there are people that start out life this way. I don't know that. And how do we help them? See, even for us, part of it is, I don't feel this anymore, but I used to. Somehow they've earned that. Somehow their choices, you know, 15-year-old on the streets because you didn't make the right choices and didn't apply yourself in school and whatever. We always want to blame people instead of love and mercy people. I'm grateful God really gets the love and mercy thing.
Yeah, I can't find cause and effect. An unbroken chain for everything like that. I'm not smart enough. I don't have the perspective. I can't figure that out. But I do know this. Each and every one of those moments, there's an incredible living God who's right there saying, I'm not going to abandon you.
Yeah.
There's grace for this too. And I just go like, gosh, I don't know why some people have to deal with what they do. And when you look at it from the sort of comparative analysis of, well, you know, who's got the worst story, it's like, you know what? There's always somebody with one worse, and there's always somebody else who we think has it a little better. And yet the truth is I don't know the broken parts of their heart. I don't know the pain that they have to go through, but it can hurt just as bad as mine, regardless of the circumstance. And the wonderful truth is the fact that there's grace and mercy available for us all in every one of those situations. And I think if I got to somehow play judge and sort it all out, I can't do that. The only meaningful engagement is to be available in those moments and to whatever glory I've got, to let that light shine. That may be hope to somebody else. And I can do that. I can't explain why they have their situation, but I can demonstrate out of my own life that there's a God who's there to help.
And God does. This book I'm reading, the story is of how God wins her out of this whole bondage she grew up in. And I love what God's doing, seemingly doing in that situation, and she's seemingly come out very healthy on the other side. So, amazing stuff how God redeems. This from Dave in Alabama, said, and he's talking about the last podcast we did, which was a little controversial. 7 pages on the website already.
Yeah,
and the God forum. Not all of it necessarily helpful, but 7 pages of it. I got a lot of email and some comments on the blog as well. This is Dave from Alabama. Boy, did you guys hit it out of the park on that last podcast. We're at the beginning of a huge shift in the views of the followers of Christ. You framed the camp so well. A father that punishes his child out of anger is wrong. However, a loving father will still punish his child. Our problem is that we equate method with emotion. Jesus was crushed or bruised in the manner he was not because it fulfilled the father's need for vengeance against sin. It was rather the method God needed to redeem man to himself. This is such a big issue and so freeing. It affects so many areas of relationship to God, each other, and even evangelism. Great, great job, and so timely. These are the issues that will carry the gospel to the places it has never been able to be.
Cool.
To go. Yeah, I don't like the whole camp talk. You know, I'm not really going, okay, now we are the non-penal substitution guys. I'm really
sorry,
not,
don't have a flag, no camp,
no
tents.
I don't
want to
be in one of those camps. I mean, a lot of email dialogues with people are into that punishment kind of side, and that's all they can see. The deal is God had to punish. There is no redemption. Death is about punishment. Hell is about punishment. I'm going, can't death and hell just be the consequences of sin? You're saying they're punishment. The scripture just says they're a reality. The soul that sins will die. That people who don't respond to the life of Jesus are cast into the outer darkness. It doesn't say God's doing the casting. We kind of assume, well, it must be God doing the casting. God's this tyrannical judge that really will be sated or has to. I'm going, does it all have to be punishment? Can it simply be the wages, the consequences of sin is death? Can it just be that the way we live outside of God's redemption is absolutely destructive to every fiber of our being? It is. And that God has sent himself to redeem us from that. It's not, well, let me punish something for everyone else. That just makes no sense to me.
Yeah, I don't think God has a bunch of pent-up aggression he's got to take out on some source that can handle it.
And someone sent us this, interesting, in Galatians 4:17. This is from The Message. Those heretical teachers go to great lengths to flatter you, but their motives are rotten. They want to shut you out of the free world of God's grace so that you will always depend on them for their approval, direction, and making them feel important. Isn't that funny? Galatians 4, the whole problem with the whole kind of false teaching is people want to rob you from grace. And every time we talk about grace, there's always, yeah, but you can't get away from the just God.
And I do kind of go like, gosh, there was a point in my life when I made the same protest. Like, well, you're just saying sin's okay. It's like, no, sin's not okay. There's nothing okay about sin. But that doesn't change the reality of grace.
And there's nothing about love that isn't just.
Yeah.
I think when people say, well, you're talking about love and grace. Well, you gotta forget God's justice. How can you? How can God be unjust in his gracefulness or ungraceful in his justice? These are not competing ends of the scale that we have to balance. I think God is absolutely committed to the truth in all. That podcast we did on the kindness and severity, the light comes into the darkness.
Yeah.
And the darkness has to deal with it. And it's not just God's being nice and grace is a proposition. Grace is not a proposition. It's an invitation into a relationship, and in that relationship you will find light and justice and holiness and compassion and mercy.
Grace is not an excuse for sin. It's a reality that displaces sin, if grace really is there. I think so oftentimes when people bring their protests, you're just like, gosh, I stopped feeling like I had to control other people's behavior. And man, has that brought a tremendous amount of freedom to my life and the capacity to even love them.
Yep.
Because I don't, it's all theoretical in my arguments. And it's like, you know what? I'm not responsible for what you do. I'm not. I can love you. I'm responsible for how I relate to you. But I'm not responsible for what you do with that.
No, and loving me, you're going to be honest with me. Loving me is going to be, I'm going to move you to a better place of wholeness. And if I can, I'll serve you in that process. But no, we cannot make anyone change. And our obnoxiousness towards them is not going to help the process.
And I think all the religious arguments and the issues are, they really are from a bent of somehow we're meant to be the police keepers. And it's like, you know what? We're not.
Yeah. Yep.
And it's not saying sin's okay. No, sin's nothing's okay about it. But it's not my job to prevent someone else from doing that. I really believe that is the domain of the Holy Spirit, and he's amazingly powerful. And I could be a conduit of communicating a lifeline.
Yeah.
Not an excuse, but a lifeline to a different way of living.
Yeah, Rolf sent us this from Germany, talking about seeing Jesus' death as a cure, not a punishment. And he wrote this, he said, from Malachi 4, of all places, Malachi 4, 2, "But unto you who revere and worshipfully fear my name shall the Son of Righteousness arise with healing in his wings and his beams, and you shall go forth like calves dancing and leaping for joy." Because I know there's been some pushback. We haven't gotten to all the letters here. There's a couple that were, you know, what about this? What about that? And I just think you guys missed the point, and you're overcharacterized people on the other side of this issue. And we might have. We were trying to provide just a clear way of viewing it. This not so much to attack people who see it differently, but to really relook at the language of Scripture and see that, yeah, there is language of punishment in there in the way the Old Testament guys saw it. But there's also the language of this was about healing and purifying and redeeming. That the heart of God was not just my justice has to be satisfied by a punishment. My justice and love are satisfied by a healing that brings people into life. So we can't get to the rest of it because we're just flat out of time, dude.
That's okay.
People are going to miss their bus stops and train stations.
Day.
You too. Thank you for joining us today on The God Journey. If you'd like to participate in the conversation, you may do so at our website, thegodjourney.com.